This week on Art of the Air feature Highland Park Summer Theater Disney's Little Mermaid with director Ali Shenkin along with some cast members. Next, we interview the founder and president Michelle Golden of Books, Brushes, and Bands for Education about the program and her own art practice. Our spotlight is on Dune Summer Theater July 30 and 31st Cabaret Night at the Gardens at Michigan City's Friendship Botanical Gardens.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. And we'd like to welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight, who's been with us before. They're doing the Dunes Summer Theater, Dunes Arts Foundation, and they have a great event coming up on July 30th and 31st, Friday, Saturday, and they're going to tell us about that. We'd like to welcome Elise Camrani, Tito Sanchez-William, and Steve Scott, who's directing it. Welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Aloha,
thank you,
everyone.
Larry. No, thank you for having us back.
Well, we'd like to you tell us a little bit about what you have. It's called a Cabaret at the Gardens, Music Under the Stars, and Elise, I'll let you start on that.
Yeah, well, we have a great lineup of international artists coming. All of them are living in the United States, but they've come from different parts of the world. And Steve Scott is going to be host and directing, and a band with music director Andrew Flash. And we were just out there. It's a gorgeous space, and we're very excited about it. And you can find out more by going to dunesarts.org and you read up on our artists. So dunesarts.org/artists.
Excellent. So Tito, what's your involvement in this production?
I'll be doing the choreography. If people did get a chance to catch Forever Plot and you enjoy the dancing, then I think you'll enjoy the choreography for this one as well. We really want to focus in the performance as long as the music. So we are really going to make this night as special as we can.
Is there a capacity?
Well, I believe the capacity can be all the way up to, unless I'm wrong here, 400 or 500 people. That's my understanding. Yeah, from talking to John. You can really pack up the house.
They have 500 seats, chairs, so I think we're fine.
And this is a fundraiser for the theaters, right? That's correct. And so can you tell every...
No? Yeah, the ticket price is $40, and it starts at 6:30 and it ends at 9. There will be a food truck there. There will be a bar there. So it's just going to be a really fun night. Children under 18... coming with a family member are free.
And it will benefit both the Dunes Arts Foundation and Friendship Gardens. So it's a great way to contribute to both of these worthy organizations.
Support both of them.
Steve, tell us a little about what's on the plate for the performances and a little bit about Friendship Gardens.
Oh, wow. Well, Friendship Gardens is just a beautiful setting for this. I mean, the pavilion is right in the middle of the gardens, and I couldn't think of a better place to spend a summer evening with the beautiful gardens and the trees and all of that. And what we're doing is a Broadway cabaret. And we're featuring songs from a wide array of composers, from everything from Rodgers and Hammerstein to Stephen Sondheim to Jason Robert Brown and Adam Gettle. So it's kind of a wide kind of panoply of Broadway hits. So there's something for everyone. Really just lovely. And a remarkable group, as Lee said, of 10 singers, some that Dunes patrons have seen this summer already, and some who are new to us that we're bringing in from all over the country. So it's going to be just a lot of fun and a great way to kind of embrace the history of musical theater in America and embrace this beautiful location where we're performing. I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to this.
And Elise, tell us where it is at. You know, some people may not be familiar where Friendship Gardens is located.
Well, it's in Michigan City, and it's hundreds of acres. I don't know exactly how many acres of gorgeous manicured gardens from all over the world. And you can enter on, if you go down US 12, but there's a big sign out in front, and we will have signs for where you need to park. I think we're having the audience park in a special place. That's why I'm hesitating. It's not
right.
The normal place.
Yeah.
You have to go around, so it's a little bit closer to the pavilion, but just follow the signs or call us or call Friendship Gardens to get directions specifically.
And I guess we talked to LaPorte County Symphony in one of our interviews, and they, of course, are going to perform there. And the pavilion is actually brand new. It's only been there a little over a year, so it's a great outdoor venue. Yep. And a question we asked one of our other theater people that we had on for another interview is, compare the difference of being indoors, because you've been almost outdoors all season, versus being in a theater.
It's a factor you have to kind of figure on when you're performing outdoors, because the weather changes. Well, we know the weather in Michiana changes from minute to minute. So sometimes it's really hot, sometimes it's really cold. But our performers have learned to embrace that and to kind of use that in the performance. We have Midsummer Night's Dream running for one more weekend. And it's kind of a thrill because it's a different show every night, depending on what God has given us to perform in. So you kind of have to factor in all of that kind of stuff. But it is so much more kind of liberating to be outside than it is to be indoors, especially at this season. Sitting there under the stars and under the canopy of the trees in Friendship Gardens, it's just a perfect way to spend a summer evening.
Well, and I just want to say that we're going rain or shine, because
right.
It's covered and we have plastic. Yeah. So just come out, whether it's raining or sunshine.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's Cabaret the Gardens, Music in the Stars at Friendship Gardens, 2022 East US 12 in Michigan City, for a great evening. That's July 30th and 31st. Starts at 6:30, and you can find out more information on the website. Thank you so much for being an Art of the Air Spotlight.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
And we'd like to welcome to Art on the Air, Highland Park Summer Theater Program. They'll be doing a production of Disney's Little Mermaid. And, of course, that's outdoors at Main Square Gazebo. That's 5th Street and Highway Avenue in Highland. And, of course, it's a bring-your-own lawn chairs, blankets, and, of course, the bug spray. And the show will be running July 29th, 30th, 31st, August 5th, 6th, and 7th. So you can get programs for $2, and also front row reserve seating is $2. I'd like to welcome to the show the director, Alexandra Allie Schenken. Tenley Edwardson,
hello.
And she plays our Ariel, and Thomas Earhart, who's going to play Eric in their production. Welcome to Art on the Air.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you so much for having us.
Aloha, everyone.
Well, what we're going to do is ask you each a little bit about your background history before we talk about the show. And I'm going to take Allie first because, I have a little history with her anyway. As full disclosure, she was one of my students at Munster Theater Company at Munster High School. But tell us a little bit about your personal background growing up and theater background, which I know a little bit myself, and how you got into the Parks Theater. So go away, Allie.
You can share any Larry stories that you want.
Go ahead.
Oh, God. I don't know if my memory's good enough for that one. But hello, everyone. My name is Allie Schenken. I am the director. I am currently a public relations major at Purdue University with a minor in human development and family studies. So I actually started theater my freshman year of high school. I saw my sister in a production over at Munster High School, and I immediately fell in love. I quit all of my sports to join theater. Best decision ever that I've made. And the very first show that I did was Up the Down Staircase. It was a play. And then that same year, I approached the lab and I said, hey, I want to start directing. And he's just like, okay, you can be a production assistant for The Secret Garden. And so I was a production assistant. And then later that year, we did our big spring production and I was able to be the student assistant director. So that was one of my first big roles and everything. I just remember, I forgot what store we were going to, but we were just getting antlers and stuff because there's Beauty and the Beast. So, and I just remember I went with the student director and it was just so much fun. And I was able to see the ins and outs. And then my sophomore year of high school, I was the student director as well for Cinderella. I did a bunch of other stuff, you know, like acting and whatnot, but we're going to talk about my directing experience. My junior year, I did take a little break. I did do some stuff over at Toll Theater over in Hammond, Indiana. And then finally, my senior year, I decided it was time to get back in the acting. So actually, one of my favorite shows that I did was my senior year. I did You Can't Take It With You, where I played Alice Sycamore. It was honestly one of the best shows. It was my first time also doing like a three-act show. I mean, granted, we did combine it into two acts. But it was just a great show, great way to end my senior year. And then also I student directed Tarzan with Ray Palace, who is the current auditorium director at Munster High School. So that's just my Munster High School, you know, directing experience. And then when it came to directing for Highland Parks and Recreation, at the time, Matt Gilson was working and he still is a good friend of my cousin. But he reached out to my dad and was just like, hey, I know your girls do a bunch of theater and stuff. Would one of them like to be a director? And my dad's just like, well, I don't know about the eldest one because she does a lot of the tech side. But let me ask my youngest one. And I was 19 at the time. I'm still pretty young, but I was 19. And I said, yes, I didn't really know what I was getting myself into because that was my first time directing without, you know, lab or Ray holding my hand, you know, just someone holding my hand. So it was a great experience. Decided to do Willy Wonka. We had a great turnout. Honestly, for being 19 years old, I'm patting myself on the back, like directing a full-length musical. And then I directed a few things over at Purdue University as well. And I was into some stuff, but that's enough about me. I want to allow Thomas and Tenley to talk as well.
Well, Thomas, then go ahead and tell us a little bit about your background, how you got from where you were to where you are now.
Sure. So, again, my name is Thomas Earhart, and I am playing Prince Eric. I just graduated from Joliet Junior College with my associates in musical theater, and I'm going to transfer that to a BFA, hopefully starting with auditions in February. I actually started theater in the second half of my junior year of high school. So I haven't been doing this maybe 6-ish years. I started with a play called The Musical Comedy Murders of 1940, and one of my favorite shows I've ever done. It was fantastic. And then from there, it kind of just, the bug got me, and I was just can't stop, won't stop doing shows constantly through high school. Once high school ended, I actually live in Bradley, Illinois, so I started doing shows around the Kankakee area, up near Joliet, Orland Park. I started branching out to doing some paid stuff in like the suburbs of Chicago. I actually have an audition July 25th for a semi-professional show, which I think is pretty exciting for myself. But actually, I didn't think I was actually going to be able to do this show because when I auditioned, I was in the middle of a run of Something Rotten where I was playing Shakespeare, which was a blast in and of itself. And just going straight from that into this is two separate dimensions of shows, which was kind of crazy for me to turn it around that quickly. But I'm 95% an actor, performer on stage. If I'm not and I'm involved in a show, I'm normally choreographing or music directing. I kind of like to dabble with both, mainly dancing because that's my strong suit. But yeah, after this, I pretty much have the entire rest of the year booked up. I'm choreographing Music Man, literally auditions for Music Man are the day that our show closes. Yeah.
Thomas, do you come from a musical family?
I don't at all.
So when did you start singing then? And also I want to talk about dancing too. So if you can talk about dance, because was there a program in school or did you have to do that privately?
The music side of things, I started choir in sixth grade, but I didn't start theater until high school. I kind of just wanted to sing for fun. In junior high, I did it as a way to get out of sitting in my homeroom and being bored. That kind of took the alternative and it kind of grew into what it is now. And then junior year, my music director, or my choir director, I should say, said, "We need guys, please audition for this show." And I said, "Okay, fine." And then the rest is history from there. when it comes to dance, the first musical I did, The Drowsy Chaperone, is a huge tap show. And I had never tapped a day in my life, but I was playing George, who was front and center for the entire big tap number. And I was like, "Oh, good God. Okay, this is happening." but I just slowly discovered that I'm a natural when it comes to dancing. The first few shows I did, I was a featured dancer in like the huge dance numbers. And when I did Beauty and the Beast, the vocal director literally thought I was a trained dancer, and I was not.
Excellent.
So I've only been like training in dance for about a year, with, Stephen Gorski up near Midlothian. I take privates about once a week for 2 hours. So, he's kind of getting me in shape for whatever these college auditions throw my way.
Excellent.
That's wonderful. So Tenley, can you give us your background?
Of course. So my name is Tenley Edvardsen. I am Ariel. So I just recently graduated from Lake Central High School. And now this coming fall, I will be attending Millikan University in Decatur, Illinois, and pursuing a BFA in musical theater. So I started, actually my mom got me into theater. So my first show was around, I think when I was 5, and she just put me in the car one day and said, "I'm going to take you to this thing." And I was like, "Well, okay, sure, whatever. I'm cool with anything." And come to find out, it was The Wizard of Oz when Crown Point Theater, community theater was like still a thing. And I just like walked in, I sang, I think, Happy Birthday or something. And they were like, "She's cute. We're going to put you in." And then doing that, I immediately fell in love with it and was like, "This is so cool." Watching all like the grown-ups and everything. So then after that, my mom every summer tried finding me shows to do. So I've done shows all around Northwest Indiana. I did some with, the Star Plaza. I was in Annie in that one, and Jesus Christ Superstar. And then I did Toll Theater for a little bit. And I also did a couple shows with, Eminem Ross Theater at Maryville High School in the summer. And then I didn't start doing shows at school until like middle school. And that was when I started doing a lot of plays, and I was like, "Oh, this is different. I don't have to sing and dance." Okay. So that was fun. And then as soon as I got to high school, of course I was going to do theater, and I fell in love with that also, doing these big productions and everything. But actually I was planning, around eighth grade to be an opera singer. I wanted to do vocal performance and everything. And that was my path. And then about sophomore year of high school, when we did the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee and I played Olive, I was like, "No, I think I'm going to stick with musical theater." And I still sing classical music and everything, but I'm trying to focus more on the musical theater route. But yeah, theater has been a very, very big part of my life.
Tenley, do you like the backstage stuff as well? Like the set building?
Yeah, I didn't do a lot of that until high school. When we have actually at LC, we have a, technical theater class. So one year I did the advanced like regular theater and all that, where we did improv and everything. And I was like, maybe I'll give technical theater a try. And I learned the soundboard and the lights and costumes and everything. And I also love that too. I've directed a couple of one acts at LC, and I did costumes for a couple shows and props. So I've gotten the backstage and the onstage portions. So I've seen it all. Yeah.
It's a great community.
Back to you, Allie. I'd like to ask, since you've done both sides of both straight plays versus musicals, and you know personally my love for musicals. So tell us a little about your experience between both.
Yeah, so I can't sing at all. So that's why.
No, I disagree with that. You can sing all right. Because I remember the story here is you kept resisting auditioning for musicals. And I said, it's okay in chorus because you're singing with a group. So you can sing well enough to be in that. And like Mr. Woods would say, you know, our music director, everyone can sing unless they actually have an actual ear problem. Yeah. So we got you to sing.
Yes. Okay. To be fair, I can't sing well. I'm not like a Tenley or Thomas, you know, trained and everything. I never got that classical training because, again, like I did sports for the first, like while Tenley was Tenley, I watched you in Wizard of Oz. But while Tenley was, you know, doing musical theater at a young age, I was doing sports. So just because I couldn't sing well, that's why I wanted to get my foot in the door. Like, I still wanted to be part of doing the shows at high school and everything. So that's why I asked if I could, you know, be a production assistant, work stage crew, direct. And that really got my foot in the door with the musicals, just because, like, I knew I wasn't as well of a singer as everyone else. I knew like my acting abilities was just up to par with everyone. And that's why I always, you know, really pushed myself for those play auditions to get a decent role, because, you know, like this was the only spot or chance that I had for being, you know, really shown on stage. But when it came to the directing, I also wanted, I'm a big believer in, if you want to do well in theater or the arts community, you need to know all the ins and outs. So that was also my chance with musicals, to know all the ins and outs of making the show. I know, I'm sorry, I just kind of went off on a little tangent.
Well, that's
right,
okay.
There.
What my experience is between straight plays, you have a more intimate contact with the cast. Mm-hmm. With a musical, you're working through other people, choreographer, music director. And so you have to sort of bring those, and of course, I've worked on musicals where the director just directs the acting, the music director does the music, and then it comes together as a collision, a non-professional theater, that is. Of course, my version wasn't that. I always was very collective. I said I pulled everything together. But that's hard. It's a whole different thing, because straight plays are very intimate. You know, you're working directly with the cast. You're not working quite as directly with the cast in a musical.
I'm kind of like, for my directing style, I like to make sure that my vocal director, my assistant director, my choreographer, we're all on the same page, just because, you know, it makes things a lot calmer and not as crazy. I like to make sure I hear their say, their opinion about something. I also want to give them that creative outlet as well, because, you know, what I'm seeing is just one view. Like, we need to get multiple viewpoints coming with these musicals, especially if we're doing an outdoor show. So that's why I always want to make sure that I get all their viewpoints. You know, I just want to hear all their viewpoints, just because, again, it's just what I'm seeing. I want to see what they're seeing as well, because I'm really, like, with my major, like, we're very big into group projects, hearing all different points of views and stuff, because one view is not just good enough. So that's basic. When it comes to directing, that's basically my directing take, is just making sure, you know, I hear their view. But at the end of the day, it's also, you know,
your vision.
Right. Your experience.
Mm-hmm.
Well, two things real quick, and then I'll move on to Thomas and Tenley. Compare working in a fully equipped theater versus being outside. I mean, I know that I experienced it firsthand, and I'll say this as a quick side note. I was the founding member of the original Main Square Players in 1981 as the tech director back then. And so I understand, and that was a lot different than what we had in terms of electrical things we didn't have. And we did that 2 years before Main Square Players moved on out of the square, and then Parks kind of picked the thing up. But tell us about your experience of that, because you've experienced both.
Yeah, it is honestly a huge difference. I remember when I did it with Wonka my first year, I kind of made the mistake of not going go see the stage before I started blocking. So I literally 3 weeks in, I went in, I'm like, okay, so the backstage area is not closed off and it's underneath the gazebo. Because I mean, when you are doing shows inside an auditorium space, you don't see the actors until they're on stage. Once when you come to Main Square Gazebo, you pretty much see those actors sitting behind the stage in the picnic tables. So I always tell my kids, I'm like, make sure you're always in character, because I mean, especially because this is a Disney production, we don't want to lose the magic. So that's probably one of like the main big differences, is the public can see you right away. Another main difference is, again, we are outdoors. We have bugs. Like you said earlier, bring that bug spray. And it's kind of seating where you want it to be. Like, you're not going to purchase a ticket and that ticket tells you where to sit. It's basically, I mean, when it comes to the free seating, it's first come, first served. So that's why a lot of people come and place their chairs out as soon as possible, just so they can get a good seat. Again, also prop set. We don't have a place where it's like right behind the auditorium or underneath the stage where we can build our sets. We can build props. This year, we actually have one of the fathers, Jose, his daughter is playing Sebastian. He's actually going to be building some of our sets on stage, like directly on stage while we're performing. This is mainly done, you know, when actors are either performing. This is like hidden from them. They can't see it. I mean, with us for Munster High School, like, we had, you know, tech crew, like classes and stuff like this. So we are pretty much making everything on stage. And then speaking of sets, our sets are, we can never like take them down. They are pretty much on the gazebo 24/7. So that's why I get there early, because it is a park. So, and I mean, a park, anyone can use or go on the stuff. I'm not saying to go on the stuff. please don't. Because that's all we have. The sets are, you know, stored away in an auditorium. But with us, we just have to leave them right there on the stage. So, though, I mean, I can honestly go on a huge tangent about the differences, but those are probably like the main differences. It is a bit harder. It is a bit difficult. But I think that's why I'm enjoying directing outside, because it's a bit of a challenge. And Lab, you should know me. I like a nice challenge.
Yes, you do. Well, we got about 4 minutes left, and we want to make sure we have Tenley and Thomas. So I'll throw this out to either one of you. Your experiences from the same type of question, but from an acting point of view, performing outdoors at the gazebo versus like in a traditional theater.
Okay. So I will say this is not my first time performing outside. I did Beauty and the Beast outdoors a few years ago. I did You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown outdoors. I did Something Rotten partially outdoors, and then weather kind of changed that. So I kind of knew going into this what the challenges of outdoors would be, like the bugs and the lighting isn't always great. And sometimes there's sound issues and the set. You can't really do set changes if you don't have a place to hang a drop, which this location we can't. So I kind of knew going into this that this is how it was going to be. And personally, I feel I was able to adjust very quickly to what we needed. What I wasn't expecting is, as Ellie explained, that the green room was downstairs and that the back was completely open. That was the one thing that kind of threw me a little bit. So, you know, you learn something new every time you perform something. And I think that's just going to be my personal challenge for this show, is getting used to the audience seeing me at all times and being in character no matter where I'm at. Think this will be a good experience.
And Tenley, tell us your experience.
Well, I actually did Disney Under the Stars with Highland Parks long time ago. I was probably in like fourth grade. So I had a little experience with being outside and dealing with like weather and bugs, which, by the way, I came home after rehearsal last night and I woke up covered. I am covered in mosquito bites.
Second.
So that's fun. But I don't think it will be hard to adjust so much, just because it's just doing a show, but just outside. So I just have to act like I'm inside, just with a few little adjustments. But I am a little nervous because I'm one of the only people constantly changing throughout the show. And so we're trying to figure out, like, do we get a tent? Do we get people to hold up towels so no one sees me changing? So that's one thing I'm a little worried about, is changing in the middle of a park. But everything else I think will be fine. I also just have to, like, get my voice used to it too, and being out with, like, the humidity and, like, all the weather and everything, that might have an effect on my voice. But I'm excited, and I'm looking forward to seeing the park full of so many people, because I haven't had theater like this in a while, and I'm really excited to have it back. So, yeah.
Okay, well, Allie, we have just about less than a minute left. Give us some information about when it is, where it is, and some of the things you need to know before you show up to Main Square Gazebo.
Yeah, so the show is July 29th through the 31st, and then August 5th through the 7th at 8 p.m. over at Main Square Gazebo in Highland, Indiana. If you want to sit front row, like very close up, we will be selling 50 tickets per showing, so they're $2 each. If you want to purchase one of those, please go to Lincoln Center over in Highland, Indiana, to purchase those tickets. Also, make sure you bring something to sit on, whether that be a chair, a blanket, preferably a chair so you can see it better, and then also bring your bug spray. I am very proud of how these kids are doing.
Well, thank you so much, and thanks to all of you. That's Disney's Little Mermaid Highland Park Summer Theater Program, July 29th, 30th, 31st, August 5th, 6th, 7th, 8 p.m. And I don't know, did we ask about, do you have any rain dates if you're rained out?
If we are rained out, honestly, I don't know what we're doing yet, because that didn't happen with Wonka, so I'm knocking on wood. We're saying that it's not going to rain.
Okay. No, we won't do anything from the Fantastics. Like, soon it's going to rain. I can feel it. Anyway, bring your long chair, blanket, bug spray. Concessions will be open. And we'd like to thank you for coming on Art of the Air. That was director Allie Schenken, Tenley Evertson was our aerial, and Thomas Earhart. Thank you so much for being on Art of the Air, and you'll be opening next week.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
We'd like to welcome to Art on the Air. Growing up in a very creative household, she had the luxury to learn all kinds of things, attend live concerts, theater, piano lessons, became nurtured in that, then started her own art practice, but also she's involved in something else for the community called Books, Brushes, and Bands for Education. And unfortunately, it's kind of been on the back burner because of all the things that have happened with COVID, and we'll talk about that. We'd like to welcome to Art of the Air, Michelle Golden. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome. Nice to have you here.
Well, Michelle, one thing we always want to talk about with our people is, tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of your personal journey, how you got from, like, let's say, where you were to where you are now. Everything about you.
Well, born and raised in Hammond, Indiana, educated in the Hammond Public Schools. I was very fortunate to live in the same house in the same neighborhood all my way through school. So very traditional household with two parents and, a family that went to church every Sunday. A consummate domestic mother who was always there. You know, dinner was always on the table. People were always welcome there that didn't have a place. I wouldn't say the most perfect, but it was, looking back, I really
pretty stable.
Very stable. Mm-hmm. I had a great childhood growing up. I learned a lot. And now as an adult, I realize that living in a creative household was probably the biggest resource, that I had as a child, but you don't realize it then until later on. And so that's the epiphany of what's really been happening in the last 10 years, realizing that and that's impacting my work now.
So tell us about your schooling, all the way from, you know, where you went to schools and college and such as that.
Growing up, I really enjoyed school. I went to Kenwood Elementary School and then went on to Eggers when it was just starting to become diverse. Hammond was really just starting to become diverse. And I grew up in a neighborhood that was predominantly white, that had, you know, means. People were coming and going and being transferred, white collar jobs. It was, you know, like the perfect neighborhood that really doesn't exist necessarily anymore, especially where I'm at, where I'm living now. But then I had the opportunity. I had a friend in high school at the time that was pushing me to go to college away. She wanted me to go away. And my parents did not want me to go away. There was a very unfortunate accident with my father who changed our financial picture. And I was really needed at home, but something inside of me said I really needed to go away. And I was accepted into Purdue West Lafayette, and I decided that I was going. It was a tough decision. It was the best decision I ever made to leave and be away for 4 years. But I started out in a science degree. Somebody put something in my head that I was going to be a medical technologist, but I had won a $500 scholarship at Hammond High for my college studies. And I used that to buy materials at Deke's Art Supply Store, which I'm sure is not in business anymore. And I took a non-art major class. I had been taking art classes at Hammond High my entire time and always really starting to develop my own arts practice, although it wasn't called that then.
So what did you focus on then? In elementary school, was there an arts program that had you engaged?
I always liked painting, always liked painting. I liked working with words. I had a grandmother who was really big on making lists of words and rhyming and, you know, teaching. She was kind of teaching me phonetic awareness and literacy then, and I didn't even really know it. And the key thing about my past is that I was the first grandchild, and I would sit with her and she helped me practice my letters. So I really credit my start as a calligrapher to her because she was insistent on me sitting still and practicing until it was perfect in her eyes. And when I was about 11, I had an aunt who bought a calligraphy set for me, a dip pen. And I was sort of teaching myself, and I really enjoyed that. But I had an art teacher in high school who was a calligrapher, and he loved teaching it with an actual bottle of ink and a dip pen. And I really took to that. When I was in high school, I was painting and taking art classes every single semester that I could possibly fit it in. And in college, I was looking forward at Purdue West Lafayette to be able to take a calligraphy class because it was, you know, part of the offering. Yet the teacher retired the year that I started, and they never replaced the class because word processing was beginning to become the thing. And I did all my papers in college on a typewriter because that's what was of the time. But the computer was gradually starting to eke in and over. I could not get my head into the science classes that I had to take for medical technology. And 8 weeks into my college career, I changed my major to fine arts and ended up graduating in 4 years with a degree in concentration in painting, drawing, and printmaking.
So I have two sort of queries. One is, did your grandmother have beautiful handwriting? Is it something that you can recall?
Not really. I remember her doing a lot of writing. We would always write letters to each other. I'm very sensitive to human mark that way because that's just part of my, it's part of me really, because it was something that I was raised with, but I don't remember that. I think I remember her demeanor and her attention to detail and something that was so that she knew that she could impart to me. My mother didn't have time to sit and read with me and do those things with me because I had three younger brothers that she had to watch and take care of. But my grandmother was all about the responsibility, the accountability, all those characteristics and values that were important, you know, and she knew how to impart that through the method and means of writing.
That's, yes, that's really, that's a beautiful relationship. So in your university experience, can you describe to us the direction your art then took? I'm assuming that it has a bit of calligraphy in it, but maybe it doesn't. I don't know.
So when I was in school, everything was, I was taking an illustration class, which I did not like. I wasn't strong there. And talking to my professor, he said, you know, I can teach you to become a good illustrator, but I can't teach you to become a fine artist. I can't teach you to be a painter. And I really didn't care about that. Something had always drawn me to painting, to the liquid, to the brushes. Not that I didn't use pencil and graphite and things like that, but it was always the paint, the feel of that. And I never incorporated any kind of graphic or lettering into my painting then. It really wasn't allowed. We were working on very traditional means and compositions. I do remember some of my professors literally ripping the paintbrushes out of my hands and trying to correct me, which was tough because the only person that really understood my work at the time was a painting professor who was my drawing professor, and he identified how I saw and was then steering me into Eastern philosophy and having me read things which I didn't understand then, but I absolutely understand now. And that seems to be where my life is really, really gone.
So what type of painting, what medium were you using in your paintings?
Then I was doing oil, some acrylic, but mostly oil. I also was doing lithography at the time and working with actual stones, which was a wonderful process. I really enjoyed that. I would love to be able to do something like that again, dabble in it. But I think where I'm at now, that's not a practical, you know, doing something like that would not be practical in my life. And the busyness, I need to stick to something that's, you know, more in the lines of painting and more accessible, I think, for me.
So how did you transition then from all of that background to starting Books, Brushes, Bands for Education? And within that, are you able to maintain a personal art practice as well?
That's a great question. A long story, but the short of it would be when I graduated from school, I ended up working in two different art engrossing studios, which traditionally now do not exist anymore. There was a time when all formal documents were created by hand and done with ground ink. That's how I was trained back in the 80s. And I worked for someone else for about 6 years, 6.5 years. And my job was to work and develop my lettering to become perfect, like in a computer, because that's the way the documents needed to look. So there really wasn't a place for self-expression necessarily. So I'm actually a trained document maker in a sense. But when I was working for someone else, I knew that I didn't want to do that forever. I didn't like the way that the gentleman was running his business. I didn't like his unethicalness, if you will. And I had the ability then to work on huge accounts like Medical Library Association, American Library Association, Arthur Anderson. I mean, you name it, we did work for everybody. And I learned how to manage deadlines and things like that. And then eventually was interfacing a little bit with their clients, which they did not like because they wanted just to do that. But my father at the time was working in another engrossing studio, which I started in, and things just kind of transitioned where I got married. I started a family and I was pregnant in my second studio and I knew that I couldn't stay. I hated my job. I wanted to add more fine art skills into the work that was being produced and it wasn't allowed. But I learned the business there. And my dad, on the heels of me delivering my first child, started sending work to me. And before I knew it, I was developing my own studio, a commercial studio. with real clients that paid real money on a regular basis. And I kind of lost touch with an arts practice per se, because I didn't have the time as a new mother and all of the clients that I was managing to do that. But there were instances where I would dabble and I would go back to painting, and I would be creating pieces that would then be juried into the salon show locally or sent off to other places. And in that leap from working from someone else with someone else to my own business, I met a woman who very by chance, I don't know if you believe in accidents or not. I think it was very purposeful. She was a teacher at the Art Institute for a winter intensive class, doing bookbinding. And I started entering that world of an arts practice formally in 1993 by her invitation. And I was taking this class downtown and really understanding what it meant to be an artist, you know, a practicing artist that wasn't just doing commissions with deadlines that were commercially needed.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
So tell us, Michelle, how that matriculated into your current project, which you've been involved with for quite some time, Books, Brushes, and Bands for Education. So how did your practice kind of become that?
So when my first son was entering school, 5 years old, and I then became reintroduced into the school system, I realized that I wanted him to learn a lot of different things in school. And you start realizing some of the things that aren't there. My father was helping me, and my parents were both helping me raise my kids because I was so busy. But my dad was helping me with my business, but also helping me guide my kids in the arts, I guess you would say. And with him being a professional musician at one time, he really wanted his grandsons to have instrumental music in a group setting. And when I got to the point where I enrolled my first son, they told me that there had not been an elementary band program in the city of Hammond for 35 years. And that was back in 1998. And I was absolutely out of my mind. And then I started realizing, as he got a little older, what was happening in the classroom. And there wasn't an emphasis on reading in the same way that I was taught. There wasn't the reverence for materials, for books, for the incorporation of the literary, visual, and music art in the classroom. It wasn't there. And it wasn't even in the school. So purely out of the deficit of things not being the way that I wanted them as a parent, I was talking with my husband and I said, look, you know, I'm not happy. So I started getting involved in the PTA, and he started getting offers to go to other places, and working for the federal government and Social Security, he could literally apply for a job anywhere. And the short of the long is that we made the decision to stay in Hammond, Indiana. I decided that if we were going to stay, I was going to do something about what my sons weren't getting in school. And we formally started in 1999, Books, Brushes, and Bands for Education, which began in my son's school at Kenwood Elementary School, which is where I went to school. And the principal at the time, Mary Beth Nicolau, was very wonderful, open, and we did an 18-month book project at that school, inviting Judy O'Bannon at the time and some other people to kick it off. And that was really the beginning of it. And so I was kind of straddling motherhood, my own arts business, and then taking all of the skills from the Golden Studio and applying those to learning how to run a nonprofit.
So tell us how BBB4E works. I mean, what exactly does it do?
So we began the organization doing really focused on theme-based literacy projects in two different elementary schools when we could actually get into a school, when you could do that before No Child Left Behind. and things were far different in 2000, of course, than they are now. And currently they were successful projects. They served the entire school building at the time, including the staff, all the teachers and janitorial staff. And the idea always was to begin a musical program, which is what my dad wanted. He wanted my sons to be in a band, to be sitting in a band room and know what that sound was like. So the preparation for them was to get them piano lessons, which we did. So they learned how to read music. So that took care of part of it. But then 3 years after we were officially noted as BBB Free, we started our first choir program, and it was limited to Hammond students. Within a very short time, a couple of years, we broadened that so that it wasn't just in, we started realizing that other schools within Hammond wanted these, the parents wanted their kids in the program, but because it was only at a couple of different sites, it didn't serve everyone. So we then created and extended that as a community piece throughout the city of Hammond. Over time, in a very short time, we knew that if we're going to do and serve and be accessible, we needed to broaden it and make it open to anybody. And the school city of Hammond had been a wonderful partner in allowing parochial school kids, homeschool kids into the programs on site inside public school buildings. So right now we've been literally running an after-school music program since 2003, open to really any student from any zip code.
Now, how's COVID impacted your program in terms of this past year? Everything was kind of shut down.
Mm-hmm. So once everything shut down in March, we took about 7 weeks to pivot and figure out what are we going to do, because we weren't set up to do technology. We had kids from 29 different schools and 30 different zip codes, like all over the place. What do you do? Some of the kids had our instruments because we rent instruments to students. And what we decided to do was finish out the school year the best that we could online. And our teachers were great as far as figuring out how to do it. Some kids dropped because they just didn't want to Zoom. It was just too much. But we had some students stay, and we finished out the school year, did everything that we needed to do. And then went this entire next academic year completely virtual. So we're looking at starting in person again in the fall.
And you're kind of kickstarting. Would this be considered a kickstart, this Arts Inside Out that's going to be happening at the end of the month? If you could tell us about that.
Yeah. Arts Inside Out will happen July 31st, but it's going to be a way for us to see our families again and to meet new people. We have over 6,000 books that we're wanting to give away for free that people have donated to us over the years through our book brigade. There will be some demonstrations of instruments. Our teachers will be there. Parents will be able to enroll. There are discounts for enrolling at the event. We've invited the South Shore Brass Band to come and play, as well as Larry Brewer's South Shore Dance Alliance students. They're going to do their summer intensive, their culminating event there at the park. And we also have an art teacher with some volunteers who's going to be doing some art projects, just visual arts pieces that anybody could do and then take home with them. So that'll kind of be the center point of the event all day.
And you also have a fundraiser going on. And quickly tell us about your new relationship with Purdue Northwest.
Yes, we are very grateful to Chancellor Tom Keehan for his ability and his willingness to allow us on his campus this fall to start classes in person. We are coming to the end of our campaign for 20 for 20, celebrating our 20 years, where we've invited 1,000 people to each give $20. Making $20,000 to celebrate 20 years. So we need about $8,000 yet to complete our goal, which will then close September 30th of this year. EBBforE.org is our website. You can go directly there and make a contribution. If you want to know about programs, if you wanted to give us a call at 219-932-3232, 932-3232, you can do that and speak to us personally.
And you should also mention that the 4 is not F-O-R, it's the numeral 4.
Oh, yes. BBB, the number 4. Yes. Thank you very much.
So, and just wrapping up, we have about 1 minute left, Michelle, and you kind of hit most of those, but give us the date, location, and the times on July 31st is when you're having this upcoming event.
Yes. It's a Saturday at Harrison Park, toward the downtown Yemen. And we will be stationed right off of Holman Avenue that day, plainly, you know, right there on the street for people to see.
And it goes from 10 to 3 p.m.
So. Yes. Yes, it does. Thank you.
Pleasure to have you on this, Michelle Golden. She is the president of BBB number 4E and debt.org. And again, July 31st from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. in Hammond's Harrison Park there, just off of Holman. And also she has a personal art practice, which I know she doesn't have a website of it. We talked about that. And there'll be over 6,000 books available in the Book Brigade. So we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air and sharing all about your art practice and about books, brushes, and bands for education.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Art in the Air, and we'd like to thank our guests this week on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art in the Air is heard every Friday at 11 a.m. and rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP. Art in the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at LakeshorePublicRadio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP station manager, and Tom Maloney, vice president of radio operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Our theme music is by Billy Foster, with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. Underwriters for Art in the Air, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments, and Mary LeVan, Arts Patron. Information about Art in the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.